We are now recording. I want to welcome you back to the room. I want to introduce Maureen Wolfe. We are privileged to have Maureen here for the second time as a guest. I have known Maureen for a number of years. Maureen is the CEO of Sharon Merrill Advisors. I'm going to read what Maureen has given me, but before I do, I'll just tell you my own thoughts about Maureen and Sharon Merrill Advisors. They have been around forever. And if you're involved with a corporation and the shit hits the fan, you want to call a lawyer and then you want to call Sharon Merrill Advisors.
Thank you, Larry.
Maureen is the CEO of Sharon Merrill Advisors. He has a much more elegant way of putting what I just said in English. She's a strategic communications firm in areas of investor relations, story creation, stakeholder engagement. She's got a national reputation for providing CEO and boards with strategic guidance in investor relations, corporate communications, and sustainability. She's a national figure and she's an expert in special situations such as executive transitions, crisis communications, IPOs, M&As. She is the recipient of the Investor Relations Magazine Lifetime Achievement Award. So welcome, Maureen. Nice to have you with us again.
Thank you, Larry.
Now we're going to go around the room, and the spokesperson for each group will tell Maureen what they have decided, and then Maureen will react to what she hears the people say. The first group is John, Linda, Maureen, and Sanjeev.
I got the spokesman today.
Okay. Now, wait, before you start, is that your garden behind you?
That is.
Very nice. Very nice.
It's a good hobby.
Sure is. Good for you.
You
So
can't
tell
see my
us.
bonsai trees around the corner, but that's another part of the hobby.
Good. So tell us what the group said.
So we were very disappointed in the CEO for having kept this secret until the 11th hour, and he had yet to share with the board. Presumably, at this meeting, he will. What the white paper says and what we have to really react to. And we thought we needed to treat this as a real all hands on deck emergency and prepare people to work over the weekend. Suggested we create a special committee made up of the independent directors to hire an investor relations firm and a lawyer. And start finding ways to buy some time before this white paper hits. And I'm assuming the white paper is going to be bad and make many of the institutional investors want to dump the stock. One idea to try and slow that down would be to announce the hiring of an investment banking firm to explore strategic alternatives, giving the investors a sense of confidence that something's going to be done here. Finally, I question whether the CEO should remain the CEO through this, and this would be another piece of action that we should investigate because certainly he hasn't been acting in a fiduciary responsibility manner with one, the performance of the company not being good, and his answer seems to be, I can see it will get better, but not providing any evidence of why. And it's not clear that the board has really done their job in pushing for that clarity. We talked about the acquisitions. There was some resistance to it, but eventually they all approved it. The last donut acquisition seemed to perhaps be kind of a Hail Mary because it didn't seem to fit strategically and it was just perhaps buying earnings with no strategy behind it. So we would try and have this committee come up with an action plan to respond and stave off or at least delay what the activists were looking for until we had a good plan.
Okay. Thank you very much, John.
You're
The
welcome.
next group is Babs, Jack, Juliet, and Maria.
Hi, I'm representing my group today, Larry.
Nice to see you, Maria. Before you start, tell us a little bit about yourself and about your forum in Atlanta.
Yes, very good. So, hi everybody, Maria Jones. I am from Alpharetta, Georgia. I have a company called Nerdy Industry, in which we provide operations advisory service for small startups and budding entrepreneurs of all ages. I am also currently, Larry, this is a switch. I am actually on the advisory board for the COO Forum.
Good for
Formerly, I
you.
was the director of the Regional South chapter, and the COO Forum is an organization that is a peer-to-peer professional development organization for the chief operating officers.
Good
Thank
for
you,
you.
Larry.
So please tell us what your group said.
Yes, my very well-established educated group came up with the following suggestions. Similar to the previous group, very much concerned about the white paper contents and timing of release of said white paper. Found that to be not an acceptable form of behavior. A couple of things also noted about this scenario, which is roles and responsibility. So, is the CEO functioning as a CEO? We don't think so. And also, we don't feel the board is functioning as a fully, properly functioning board. Moreover, we all agree that the board should likely be disbanded and utilize two to three key services to move forward. One being a recruiter, third-party recruiter to recruit a new board. Second, a PR firm to assist with the communications of board changes, and also a crisis management firm to assist with the crisis of all of these changes. One of the main things that came up in the conversation also is that we believe collectively that the organization should really move from being public to private. That would alleviate some of the disclosures regarding the mergers and acquisitions, the influence of investors, positive there or negative, and then allow them to do more changes in a faster way.
Yeah.
Last but not least, the go forward plan and strategy, although standard, is really putting in some few folks in place, three players in place as a starting foundational team for the next board group.
Good. Thank you very much, Maria. Appreciate it.
Thank you.
Our next group is Bill, Cindy, Robert, and Robert Johnson.
I was drafted, which means volunteered into the I hope I can represent Cindy, Bill, and Robert well. I will start right away, Maureen, by saying the first thing that Cindy said was call a good PR IR firm. First words of nothing. So she was all over your business, calling you
Thank
in.
you.
I don't want to repeat what John and Maria said because you never want to be that guy. So I'm going to focus on the differences. Remove the chair title. Keep the guy in the CEO with a defined transition plan. Obviously, chair and CEO role has been asleep at the wheel. You could even say after overpaying for the acquisition and this move, he, I don't want to use overly strong language, but disingenuous might come to mind. Still behaving like a family owner versus the steward or caretaker of a publicly traded asset. I do believe the consequences you have to pay attention for if you said this, John or Maria, just shout me down. But you have to start with the share price, customer supply, the classics, right? Talent, but also the distraction of a fight. And in our group, just to explain, we had activist investor-backed executives. We had experienced board members, people who've been through this. So these, they're really good discussions. Amongst outcomes would be a very long immediate work weekend. And reach out to the activist investors and the existing top of the largest shareholders or cap table. The governance is problematic because you don't have a lot of consumer product experience. One of our groups said right out of the gate, you got to have that. I do think that, you know, there's an opportunity here to make something really positive out of something negative. This is a company that's been asleep at the wheel, obviously, by so many financial metrics. I do think starting with the general counsel, who should have informed the board independently, you have to change out a lot of the management. So that implicitly says call the lawyer, Larry, to your point. And then finally, and I don't think we covered all the questions, but in hindsight, you would have hoped for a lead independent director who is a I don't know if you want to say a counterbalance, but certainly a very strong voice to this family chair and CEO. I don't know if our group covered all of those questions, but we did our very best.
Good.
Thanks for letting us present.
Thanks very much, Robert. Our final group is Ari, Linda, Stephen, and Susan.
Okay, so Robert, I was nominated or I was drafted as well, so I understand. And a side note to Maureen, which is thank you on behalf of the group because we loved the case, found it very meaty, and we loved it so much we spent most of our time talking about the case and not enough time actioning.
Before you start going into this, would you just introduce yourself and tell people a little bit about you?
Sure, I'm Linda Cotter. I have been consulting for most of my career, although the last 11 years I worked for Advent International, which is a very large PE firm with AUM of 92 billion. I left at the end of the year and I'm now back in consulting. And we help companies under pressure to grow their EBITDA. And the focus area is right now is identifying and prioritizing and implementing AI opportunities, the most impactful ones across mid-sized companies.
Good. So, what did your group say?
Okay. So we said that we were really very shocked as well that Buck never told the board about this activism that was coming to be. And we believe he's very culpable. And we feel strongly that they should be very candid with him about his culpability and have a session with him alone and tell him, you know, our feelings as much as we can, even though we're friends of his. And then we talked about actually having him have a graceful exit. But then we decided that's probably not a good idea because there's not a lot of good options for an immediate CEO after him. And we need to really put our focus on finding someone. So you know, what we think they should do is put Funk back in because he's kind of stepped away and the guy who's kind of taking over for a while is not so good. What his name is Top, I think, right? Yeah. And so bring Funk back in and I think we really feel strongly that they need to approach the activists because we believe they could be really helpful. And it's embarrassing and it's a horrible thing for this to happen. So we should say that to them. We should say this should not have happened. We really would like your help. Here's what we plan to do. And we'd like your feedback and help. And you know, what we would do is sell some bad parts of the company and then work with the activists to refresh the board. Now, one of the things we focused on is that the governance has to change here and that there has to be term limits and refresh cycles for directors. We said there should be a separation of chair and CEO roles. They should establish a nominating and governance committee composed entirely of independents and, you know, make a commitment to the hedge funds under action plan.
Thank you very much. Thank you very much, Linda. So, Maureen, now we'll shift the spotlight to you. Please react to what you've heard.
Sure. So you had a lot of wonderful ideas and things that I definitely support. I think kind of the first step, which many of you said, is definitely to put together an independent special committee. Ideally, you want three or four directors that have financial and strategic experience on that. Obviously, you would not have Fred Funk, the CEO, as part of the board members. And what would the special committee be doing? Their charge would be to review the activist proposal, to evaluate the different strategic options that you have in this short time frame of, as we said, an all hands on weekend. Kind of think about the leadership and transition. You can't make all these changes right away, so you have to kind of be thinking through a plan. And you would, one of the first things a special committee would be doing is to hire kind of independent legal counsel that would be specifically for the board, as well as a communications expert and a financial advisor, because you are going to have to then be looking at the overall company as far as the strategy goes. And similar to what many of you said as well, we need to buy some time for the weekend. So working with the advisors over a weekend like that, you have really 72 hours to put something together. So you probably want to initiate a call or reach out to them first thing on Monday morning and deciding who would that be. And again, that would be working with the advisors and coming up who would be the best person to reach out for that. And what you would be telling them, you're trying to stall them from putting out the white paper. So you're telling them that the board has formed a special committee and we're prepared to review your proposal. And in exchange, we're asking you for kind of a 30-day standstill to give you an opportunity to review the proposal and then to have some time for your advisors, like people like me, that would help train you on what you can and you can't say in these meetings. Because everything that you say can be used against you. I mean, it all depends on what type of activist investor that this one happens to be. There are ones out there that are really just looking to get a lot of visibility for them. There's a lot of first-time activist investors out there that don't really exactly know what they're doing, so they can be very aggressive and be targeting the media. And then they're the ones that you hear about all the time, like Elliott and Starboard, who have been around for a very long time. They usually try to be very constructive and work with the companies in the beginning, and they usually don't go, a total activist crazy unless you're totally ignoring them, which in a way is what Fred Funk has been doing in this situation where he's been ignoring them over the next couple quarters. But you would want to then train a board member, at least one or two board members that would be trained on really listening, active listening versus listening to talk. You want to hear them explain what they're looking to do. You want to set up a time to meet with them. All these seem to just take place over Zoom calls or team calls right now, but you want to show them that you're open to listening to shareholder constructive feedback, but you don't want to promise anything at that meeting at all. And everything with working with the activists, typically in this situation, we would be writing everything out for you in bullet points on what you can and can't say. We would be going through the do's and don'ts of things that you can say. We would also be working on a news release to have ready in case they decide that they're not going to listen to you and they're going to put the white paper right out. So we would have a news release ready to go out that would counter that. We would have be putting a lot of materials ready, putting a media statement together. So that there'd be like a whole action plan that would be put together for over that weekend. And then similar to what you talked about as well is eventually you're going to also want to put together an engagement strategy with your other large shareholders. But typically when an activist comes after you, they've already talked to a minimum of your top 10 shareholders. So they already know that your top 10 shareholders are not happy. And so they usually have those behind you. It doesn't mean that you can't persuade them otherwise, but obviously, as you saw from the case, you have a lot of governance issues. So one of the things you would definitely want to do right away is, I know that you mentioned kind of stripping Fred of his chairman role. You would instead, because again, anything that you do, the activist is just feeding into them. So you have to really think about it from the outside. You could have all this crazy stuff going on inside, but how are we presenting ourselves to the outside world? So you would probably want to, right away, a vote for an independent director, so a lead independent director, which you should have had anyway if you were when your chair and the CEO is the same person. It's recommended that you have a lead director so that that person would be doing running the executive sessions. But if you didn't have one, you definitely would want to do that right away. And then similar to what you were also saying too is you would want to be evaluating the whole, the leadership. I mean, let's be honest, Fred has presided over stagnation. He's ignored his investors. Owen Top led a costly and failed acquisition. There's no operational integration. So definitely the special committee should probably put in place doing, a 360 performance review for both Funk and Top. Also developing a confidential CEO succession plan. So you might want to be working with an outside firm for doing that and to be prepared for a leadership transition. But again, you can't do all these things at once. So you have to, in looking at it, you have to go through in the order where you're stalling over these 30 days to kind of put things in place. And then similar to what you said as well, you would want to do a strategic review, but you really have to think about whether you wanted to put that out there publicly. Because as you know, once you announce that the company is doing a strategic review, it's usually that is a signal that the company is now up for sale. So you'd have to think whether if that's what the plan is, if that's what the board has decided that the company should sell, then you put out a strategic that the company is going to do a strategic review. Otherwise, you're going to, again, this would be behind the scenes, you would be doing that. And, with hiring a financial advisor, or if you've already been working with one, looking at those different businesses, how we've looked at, the Boss Bean one is stable and profitable. The Boss Carrot, has modest growth, but it has some labor cost issues. Boston Foods, the donut business, it's declining. And then the Boss Berries is hemorrhaging and it hasn't been integrated. So right away, that you have Boss Foods and Boss Berries are two areas that you might want to think about divesting, or at least looking at whether you should divest it or shut it down, or do you want really looking at your capital allocation strategy? Do you want to invest in the core? Or, where do you think, what does value creation look like over the next 3 years? Like, what was the company's, strategy for value creation going forward? And then, but something that you do might want to think about, just because you're looking at the board and seeing that everyone has been there for a very long time. So as part of the communications, you would want to talk about that you're refreshing the board. So as I said, you right away you would appoint a lead independent director, and then you would probably want to commit to some type of board refreshment over the next 6 to 12 months, but you couldn't get the whole board off. So knowing that the way that it's laid out now is there's three board members that are up for election every year. I mean, yes. So you would only want to do at the most three at a time, and even three at a time would be a lot. But this is where, again, it depends on who the activist is and how the relationship is when you're meeting with them, on whether there is someone, the special committee would probably want to, or that your nominating and governance committee might want to meet with those three directors that the activist has recommended. And it doesn't mean you have to put them on your board. You might want to look at them first and see, is there, out of those three, is there anyone that you'd think would be add value to the board? Like, you never would ever want to really put the activist investor on, but he also had two other people that he recommended. So you would have to look at all three of them, but you don't want to put the activist on. So, and if you didn't like any of those three, there's always compromise. This is where you're going back and forth with them, where you're talking through, well, we think we need someone that has these particular skills or this particular industry. As you talked about, there's no one on the board. I know the group that I was on talked about there was no one with consumer products experience on the board. So you might want to say, well, we're looking for that. And then you might want to have the activist recommend some people, some board members for you to look at as well, so that you're working with them kind of cooperatively. Because the whole
Maureen, just out of curiosity, was this case a real case that you disguised?
Yes.
So what actually happened?
Well, the CEO was very strong over the board. It was definitely a very weak board. And so he didn't want to make a lot of the changes that any of the outside counsels was recommending for them. So eventually the CEO was out right away. He was out. And the three activist investors were elected to the board.
How did they get the CEO out, Maureen? How did that happen? Did he resign? No.
No, well, with the three activists, board members on. I know it's terrible to say, but all the board members get very nervous because no one wants to lose their
A
position on the
salary.
board. So they decide they went along with what the activist investors really wanted them to do. But I mean, again, if you look at it, the way we all are, objectively, there had to be changes made to the board because no one, it appears, was really paying attention. They were letting, this is what happened so many times. I attended an activist conference where the CEO of Starboard, one of the big activist investors, was speaking, and he was saying that, that he knows that board members are not trying to do a poor job, that obviously they want to do a good job. But you're always thinking that next year the company's going to get better, next year the company's going to get better, next year it's going to be better. And then before you know it, it's like years and years and years, and nothing's happening, and then no one's making any change. And that's why sometimes having an activist investor comes in, is they're all about change, right? They're all about making money. I mean, that's what it's all about. They want the stock price to be higher. And a lot of times, just announcing that an activist investor is in the stock, you see the stock goes up right away after that because they're like, oh, good, there's going to be a change, So,
Are activist investors increasing or
yeah,
decreasing?
no, they're increasing. There's a lot more, even first-time activist investors where they're trying it out, people that you wouldn't even expect. But the other thing is, a lot of the big firms, like even here in Boston, a lot of the big firms that I would not be able to name, the very large firms, work with these activists behind the scenes because they don't want to be seen as an activist investor, because then, a lot of times companies don't want to meet with them then. But they have these smaller investors. I mean, if you look at, for example, what happened with the small, tiny, tiny little activist firm, Engine Number 9 going after Exxon, and they won. And why did they win? Is because they had all these very large institutions behind them.
Right.
But when they first targeted Exxon, everyone was like, who are they? No one even knows them. They've never done activism before, blah, blah, blah. And then people just, underestimated them. And you never know who's behind them. So you should always assume that your large shareholders are pushing the activists. So this is where egos get involved every single time. This is the biggest, my advice always that I try talking to all my CEOs about it, even though when they're in the situation, is that it becomes this fight of egos. And again, everyone has to step back and think, what is in the best interest of the company and the shareholders, right? Because your job is to do what's in the best interest of all your shareholders, which is not always in the best interest, perhaps, of your CEO. And if your CEO is very strong and just wants to keep fighting something, I mean, a lot of times they end up losing. So,
Let me just throw this out. Has anybody else in the room had experience with shareholder activism?
yeah, I was in our room. I was saying just very factually, and you can Google it. A major U.S. financial activist took a stake in Stanley Black & Decker in 2000. I was the SVP and the executive officer that went in and ensured everybody made a lot of money. Humanitarian. I also took a family company private, backed by another activist investor. And Maureen, a lot of things, obviously you're way more experienced than me, so a lot of things that you said we talked about in our room, Cindy, Robert, and Bill and I, and Larry. To your point, since I left my Portco CEO role, I've been doing these things, and there's a couple of things maybe Maureen said that I would view differently, but that's the nature of life. The most important thing of all of the things is to understand human nature. And Maureen hit it on the head. The weaker the board member, the more they fall in line. Bring in alpha dogs, the beta dogs follow. And so, it's all about making the money for them and straightening out a poorer or underperforming company. And you can debate, replace this person, replace that person. The most important thing that I like about having been activist board member and an activist board member backed executive is the goals are exceedingly clear. It's all about value creation. And at least for me, the drama was resolved very, very quickly. So I don't know if that's helpful, but.
Robert, I know you also have done work in Germany, and could you compare and contrast the shareholder activism issues in the US versus Germany?
You know, Larry, I got to tell you, it's been a while since you and I were together. You're a very impressive man. Yes, I lived in Germany for 20 years. I sat on four boards in Germany, public, family, and private. And I myself was the president of BASF when we converted from an AG to an SE. And for those of you who know, to Larry's point, there's two boards. There's what we call the management board, which is a legal construct that you just can't, you know, it's like the US, you walk in and replace a CEO because you want to. And then there's what they call the supervisory board. And every single member of the management board has a contract directly with the supervisory board. So as the president, I didn't report to the CEO. I reported to the chairman of the supervisory board, as did the CFO, as did president was code for COO. So wherever Maria is, I was listening intently. I was in the World 50 and G100 COO group. But you have to behave very differently. It's not as political, and there's not as much focus on, to Maureen's comments, about what you're allowed to say. It's much more informal how you talk to each other, even in activist, and we had an activist investor come in 2012 at BASF. But the management team is much more tied to the chairman, which is not the CEO, and it is illegal to be the CEO and the chairman for shareholder rights issues. Is that helpful, Larry, or do
Yep,
I?
absolutely. Yep. Anybody else have any experience in other countries that to compare and contrast to the US? No. Good. Maureen, I want to thank you very much for your comments, and I want to thank you very much for the case. We are going to have a program in a month, and it'll be another case, but this time the case is going to be something that touches you all, whether you are a company, private company, or even nonprofit companies, and that is board of director of malpractice insurance. So we'll be dealing with a case on that, and that'll be the 26th of June. Before we say goodbye, is there any help, ideas, resources, or perspectives that any of us can help any of you with? Please raise your hand, be glad to call on you. Anything you want to share, any help that we can help you with? I don't see any hands raised, so I will conclude the meeting. Thank you all for attending. And Maureen, thank you so much for the case.
Thank you, Larry. Thank you for all your comments. You were fantastic. Thank you.
Take care, everybody.
Thank you.
Thanks. Great case this month.
Bye.
Thank
Thank you,
you.
Maureen.